sitting in for George Norrie, and delighted to be doing so on a Friday night as we embark on 2 hours of open lines. All right, as I mentioned, open lines coming up. Now, I'm setting aside a special hotline for the next Einstein, or perhaps the next Nikola Tesla, or Thomas Townsend Brown. If you believe you figured out the mystery of anti-gravity, or superluminal motion, warp speed, or time travel, here's the number to call. Again, this is for the next Tesla or Einstein or Thomas Townsend Brown. 818-817-0021. Again, 818-817-0021. That's our special hotline. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, and away we go. Open lines. Let's begin with the wild card line, and Ed is in let me see if I can do this. I'll wrap my tongue around this one. Tehachapi. Oh, we lost Ed in Tehachapi. Geez, and I rehearsed it and everything. Tehachapi, California. All right, let's see. Who do we have next? We have Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hello, Thomas. Good morning. Okay, then we're going to go with Mark in Kettering, Ohio. Mark, good morning. Let's see if the third time is the charm.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Serrett.
Hi there.
Pleasure to talk to you, sir. I got into George probably 8 or 9 times over the last 10 years or so, and I guess it looks like your luck finally ran out.
Well, I'll be the judge of that.
You want to talk to me.
I'm sure you've got gold, my friend.
I got my degree in biology in 1972, so I'm not a physicist, but I did take first year physics. But thankfully, I've kept some of my old my physics book went out the window a long time ago. But yeah, I knew you got a caller, man, Mr. Sir. By the way, you're a heck of a good host. You would do a heck of a job. I recommend you.
Well, thank you for that. It's all done with mirrors.
Sharp. Yeah, you're real sharp. Anyway. I remember from physics, the two formulas I remember from physics is F equals MA, you know, force equals mass time acceleration. And the other one is the Lorentz space-time transformation equation. It stuck in my head all this time. When you plug in, I know it's a square root of something. You've got time in there, you know, and then negative whatever. It looks like the quadratic formula. That's why I think of it. And when you plug in beyond the speed of light, when you put in, you know, past the speed of light, time is going negative. It's going backwards. And I don't recall if Mark was his first name. Yeah, I didn't quite catch his last name.
Yes, yes.
If he mentioned that.
Yes, Mark Fiorentino.
I didn't hear that, Mr. Serrett. I do remember, though, when you plug in beyond the speed of light, time is going backwards. Makes you think of the Star Trek episodes. And one real quick comment, Mr. Serrett. This article was in Scientific American magazine about 10 years ago. And this professor of philosophy and physics at the University of California, San Diego, he said one of his postulates was, or not him exactly, but about time, he said, according to one, to a, at this time, you know, at this point in time back then, according to several theories, time may arise from the way that the universe is partitioned. What we perceive as time reflects the relations among its pieces. I'm reading right out of the article. And I remember a comment that George made a couple years ago when Brian Greene was on. You know Brian Greene, Professor Brian Greene.
It does not ring a bell.
He's been on the show several times. George made the comment to him. He says, "You mean we could be living in a movie?" And does that sound like a partitioned universe? You know, like you got frames in a film or something.
Right.
And,
right. Interesting.
And that also, you know, this reality that we're living in is a projection, you know, of a distant space, you know, like black hole. I was reading that not too long ago. Like we may be, it's like we're in a black hole of some kind of ourselves. If our reality is being projected from a distant bubble, you know, like we're in a giant, like that thing at Disney World, you know, that eco, what's that called at Disney World?
The Epcot Center. The Epcot Center.
Yeah. And we're in this huge, but you know that's something else. What we perceive as reality, maybe we could be living in a room, you know, in a giant computer, or maybe in a section of time. Yeah, we're in a
Right, the computer simulation theory.
Yeah, well,
yes, I've done a number of shows on that myself with Jim Elvidge. Has done some terrific work in that area and has written a couple of books. One is The Universe Solved, and the other one has to do with it's called Digital Consciousness. He suggests something very similar. Not that we're living in the Matrix like the movie per se, but that he refers to reality as sort of the virtual learning lab, and it sort of goes along the lines with what you're saying. But for those interested, yeah, check out Jim's book, The Universe Solved, because that's a really he does a great job of making a very complex concept, the idea of digital consciousness and computer simulations and so forth, very palatable, very, very easy to understand. Thank you for the call. Let's say hi to, we're going to go out to Tacoma, Washington. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, Sir Richard. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on the anti-gravity craft area. The Navy, yes. United States Navy, actually their naval air warfare central aircraft division, which is known as NOCAD, in 2016 started to patent the system for their hybrid aerospace underwater craft. And this was done by an engineer by the name of Dr. Salvador Cesar Paz. And he actually had four different patents going in that area on high-frequency gravitational wave generator, a room temperature superconductor, and electromagnetic force field generator that goes on this craft. And if you look at the patent, it's actually a triangular craft that they patented. And, of course, the patent office guy says, oh, this will never work, you know. You can't do this, you know. And the Navy came back and said, well, we've done it, and it works. You know, if the Navy's talking about it, they've had it around for at least 30 or 40 years, because if you check out all these patents are related to previous patents that go back at least 4 years. And Mark talked about the bubble around the craft. The bubble that's around that craft is extremely powerful. You know, they tried to shoot down the craft over in 1942 over Los Angeles, and the artillery was just pinging off of that craft. Apparently, these craft can go through solid material as easy as they can go through water and air. So it's an amazing technology, and people can look it up on the internet just by looking up the naval patents on these craft.
Now, this may sound like a stupid question, but why does an underwater craft need anti-gravitics?
Well, it gives you the bubble, so you can travel at any speed underwater, through the air, and through other material. Apparently, it's this bubble is so powerful, and the craft can move at such a fantastic speed that nothing will hinder its pathway.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's not so much about the lift in this case, because there's buoyancy underwater, obviously, but it has more to do with moving through a particular medium.
Correct. Absolutely.
And reducing or eliminating all resistance. Well, that's interesting. So you think they've had anti-gravitics for the last 30, 40 years. You know, it's interesting that back in the late 50s, I think it was, Boeing was talking about how they were on the cusp of solving anti-gravity. And then all of a sudden, in the space of a few months or maybe a year, all of the news coming out of Boeing suddenly stopped, like an iron curtain had descended. So one of two things might have happened. One, they failed miserably and they didn't want to talk about it anymore. Or two, they were tremendously successful beyond their wildest imagination and they didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to share it. Which one do you think it was?
Oh, it's absolutely the second one. A number of major companies like Boeing, and I have a relative that worked for Boeing starting at that time and actually became the vice president of Boeing Company. I know for a fact that these companies up to the mid-50s were telling people they were working on it, and they all went dark.
Interesting. Here's the point, though.
The disturbing. Not gonna talk about it anymore.
Here's the disturbing point, though. We're still sending astronauts up into space using rocket fuel, and once in a while, one of those things blows up, and there's absolutely no need for it if we have antigravitics. How could they reconcile themselves to that horrible reality?
It all has to do with money, you know. The more money they can get to go into that hole, the more money they can siphon off to use for these secret government programs.
Well, you'd think they would just throw us a bone, a small bone, even.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much for the call. Great hearing from you. All right, Wayne. Let's see. Let's say hi to Mayat is in New York on the wildcard line. Hello, Mayat.
Yes, good morning, Richard. A very enjoyable show. I first want to share, I was just reading in the Week magazine that Alan Parker, who created the Midnight Express movie in 1978, excellent movie, excellent music. So he was the one that we just lost who birthed the theme of Coast to Coast. Also have a couple
That's right.
of thoughts on physics. First of all, very interesting guest in Mark, and he was talking about the source. I want to say that we might more accurately refer to the source as she, S/HE, inclusive of both the yin and the yang. And I also wonder, I know he's no longer on the air, but he might be listening. And PBS had a documentary some time ago, and you shared with us the first wife's name. I think you said Milova was her name. I know it started with an M. And in that documentary, the 1905 Theory of Relativity, I can't say whether that was the special one or the general one, but she was actually the co-author. Her name was on that, and that information shortly after that documentary aired seems to have disappeared into the ether, if you will. So that's my open-line thoughts for this morning.
You're referring to his stepdaughter? Was that it? His stepdaughter?
First wife, I think you called her Milova. In fact, I'd like you to clarify exactly her name. I know it started with an M, an unusual.
That's right. His first wife. Yes, Mileva, M-I-L-E-V-A. Mileva, okay. I guess you pronounce it, or Mileva. Mileva Marich, or Marich, M-A-R-I-C, with, it looks like an, well, there's an accent over the C. I'm not sure what kind of accent that is.
She was actually the co-author. She was a physicist, and she was the co-author. Once he left the marriage, she kind of went into the ether, as it were, in terms of her co-authoring that theory of relativity. So that's an interesting aspect I wanted to bring up.
That is very interesting. Yes, you're right. She was a Serbian physicist and a mathematician, and the first wife of Albert Einstein. There you go. Well, thank you for that. You're a font of information. It's like having a co-host when Mayat's on the program. It's terrific. Makes my world, my life a lot easier. All right. Let's see. Who do we have up next? Let's say hi to Mike is in Denver. Mike, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, Richard. Thank you so much for taking my call. It's great to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm top drawer, thanks. All things considered, how about yourself?
Right. I'm doing okay considering the circumstances. You know, just trying to get through this whole pandemic like everyone else. But you know, tonight I actually had a really cool comment on something that happened at the Democratic National Convention the other day. A young man by the name of Braden Harrington, he's 13 years old from New Hampshire, gave a really amazing speech. He has a stuttering issue, and he met Joe Biden at a campaign when he was campaigning for the nomination in New Hampshire. And, you know, it was just a really cool thing that I saw Joe Biden kind of took this kid under his wing. He has a stuttering issue, and Joe Biden had a stuttering issue when he was a kid, and he, you know, had him give a little speech at the DNC the other night. And I just kind of always love talking about when I see younger people doing really cool things in the world. So I just thought I would kind of bring that up and get your thoughts on it tonight.
Yeah, I saw that. Thank you for bringing that up. You know, all the acrimony and vitriol and the politicking aside, and, you know, cards on the table, I'm not a Joe Biden fan. You know, he's been around for a long time, almost 50 years. But without getting into the politics, that was a wonderful moment. I saw the videotape earlier of Braden being introduced to Joe Biden, and Joe pulled him aside and really built this young boy up, who obviously is lacking in confidence and probably has been bullied. And it was a very tender moment, a very genuine moment, a very authentic moment, which is certainly lacking in politics today. So I will give Joe Biden, again, politics aside, I will give him full marks for that. That was a wonderful humanitarian gesture. I have to commend him for that. So thank you for mentioning that. That was one of the few, I thought, bright spots in the DNC convention. However, we'll try and gingerly avoid too much politicking tonight. Now is the time for a little escapism, don't you think? Let's say hi to Tom is in Los Angeles on our special hotline number. Hello, Tom. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thank you. So are you the next Nikola Tesla?
No. I have I'll talk real fast. So that I can get a bunch of info in. I met this woman at a friend's place, and she had been documented or abducted and repeatedly over her course from being from 10 and her ovaries and things like that, and medical documentation about her. Do you remember the Matrix book?
Well, I remember the movies.
No, there was a book. I think it was called the Matrix book, and it had it was all about UFOs, and it was a real thick paperback.
I missed that one.
Yeah, it was, this was back, I grew up in Vegas, so this was all in Vegas. So, and I'd been to a couple things and met Bob Lazar and John Lear at some small little events and stuff, but never was in the circle of anything, and I didn't want to be. So anyway, this lady, to give her credibility, she told me how to be able to see auras from people. And real quick, she had been, like you said, she felt and had been abducted when she was young, and they did something to her ovaries, and she knew when they had visited her, because she would wake up on her back, and she never did that, and she knew she'd been pregnant. There was a bunch of scrapings when she went in to get examined, and they said, wow, your ovaries are the size of a 10-year-old, where she had first started getting abducted. And they had looked like all this scarring, because she had kept getting fetuses removed from her, according to her, something from, you know, extraterrestrials, whatever. So I showed her this.
Tom, sorry, I got to jump in here, because we're going to hit the break at the bottom of the hour. Can I get you to hold on?
Yes, of course.
And we'll come back and pick up this. I like where this is going. It's fascinating. All right, Tom in L.A. stays put. We'll take more of your calls. And here are the Who with a brand new one called Break the News on Coast to Coast AM. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. A Russian cosmonaut on the International Space Station just filmed 5 UFOs. In fact, he tweeted this message out. Cosmonaut Ivan Wagner says he was recording the peak of Aurora Borealis between Australia and Antarctica. Actually, I think that would be Aurora Australis. When he noticed 5 strange objects above the space station, or above the Aurora. Wagner obviously didn't know what the objects were, and EN24News.com reports that information about the unidentified aerial bodies has already been brought to the attention of the management of the state corporation Roscosmos. There, it's expected to be analyzed by specialists from the Central Scientific Research Institute of Mechanical Engineering and the Space Research Institute of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And you can read more of that story and see the photos for yourself in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com. All right. More open lines when Coast to Coast AM continues. All right, welcome back. And Tom in Los Angeles has been holding on very patiently through the break. And Tom, let me just quickly recap. So you were in Las Vegas, and you met a young woman who believes that she was an alien abductee, and she had claimed that her ovaries had been examined, that she had given birth aboard a craft several times.
No,
is
no,
that
no,
correct?
No.
No.
She would get pregnant with her husband or whatever, but then she would wake up and she knew that she would be pregnant and have it tested, but then she would wake up on her back and she knew that she had been, they had come and the aliens had come and taken the fetus out of her or taken her up. In,
okay. So it wasn't known. Right. So it wasn't necessarily done aboard the craft, but the babies were removed.
She knew that she would wake up on her back, but she never slept on her back. And then she would know, oh, okay, it's happened again. And it would happen like every two years or something, pretty frequently. She had about 5 or 7 scarring incidents of where, you know, it had been, you know, when her ovaries got examined. And she was invited to like MIT or somewhere back east for a study on something like, because it was just so odd.
What did she think happened to her children?
Well, I think what she was telling me was that she would get pregnant. And I think what she was, she didn't, you know, this wasn't all factual, but from my outside of the box looking in, I think maybe she probably had one of those implants for tracking. And whenever she would become pregnant, they were, you know, and in the past, because I followed all this UFO stuff all my life, maybe they would know that she was pregnant and come and use her. They were using her for inventory for, you know, the hybrids or something. I don't know. That's all very speculative and just, you know, people go woo out there stuff. But, I mean, she was, when I showed her the picture in the Matrix book, they had different pictures of different aliens. It was sort of like a synopsis, only it was thick. When she saw this one picture, she freaked out, backed up across the room, she took in her breath, and it was like, you know, like, and shortness of breath, and she goes, that's what they look like. You know, it was one of the ones, the common.
Which one was it?
I don't remember what kind it was. I don't think it was a gray. It could have been, there were gray pictures. There was a picture of any, you know, the reptilian picture.
Reptilians?
The picture of the grays, but I don't remember which one she freaked out over. And now, to get back to the magnetism thing, she goes, you're the one that I'm supposed to. They had given her a picture or a design or a concept of the magnetic motor that was the basis of their technology.
Ah, so the magnets again. So Mark Fiorentino is onto something.
Yeah. When I heard about this magnetism thing, I go, oh, well, I you know, maybe I can get a. I just got a call in.
Well, and I appreciate that. Thank you. So a little bit of confirmation there. Yeah.
Yeah, this magnetism thing. And recently I follow Earthfile stuff, not to do a plug, but she recently had a post in there about when humans get up to speed on physics, frequencies, and I think it was electricity, then we would be up to the level of where they're at or something like that. That was a recent thing in her stuff.
All right. So, Tommy, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. The other thing that people in that are supposedly involved in Majestic 12 say, and this comes from Grant Cameron, who's interviewed members of Majestic 12, they say that if you really want to understand UFO propulsion, you have to understand psychic ability. So how does that fit in? That's what I'd like to know. Magnetism might be involved in the anti-gravitics, but where does the psychic ability fit in? Let's go east of the Rockies, Jersey this time. Jersey Doug, how are you? Checking in from the Garden State.
This evening.
Just hanging in there nicely. Thank you. Yourself?
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Yes, I'm curious. I do have a question for you after this, but I believe it was like a month and a half, maybe 2 months ago, you were a guest host, and you had someone on about Bigfoot. Am I correct about that?
Was that me?
It's
all a blur. It's all a blur, just like Bigfoot.
Right. I was going to say, because one show runs into the next for me here. But I had mentioned about a video that was shot by myself. It was called The New York Baby Bigfoot. And
that's right. That's right. I remember that now.
Did you get a chance?
That was me talking to you.
By any chance?
I did. I did watch that several times, actually. Just like the day after when I woke up, I watched it.
Was it great?
Yeah, that's it's quite remarkable. You definitely see some little, it looks like a little primate swinging from the tree.
Yeah, it is pretty impressive. What I wanted to get back to again, what you were speaking about earlier with the different propulsions and whatnot. Are you familiar with the Hutchinson effect, Walter Hutchinson?
Oh, yes. I've visited with John. He's out on the Gold Coast in Oregon now. He used to be in Vancouver, of course, but he sold all that equipment. And he's got a nice, well, the last time I saw him was probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and I stayed at his place out on the Gold Coast, beautiful part of Oregon, and he and his lovely bride were working on something else. Well, not so much on the anti-gravitics. Now they're trying to affect radiation. Coming ashore from Fukushima. At that time, that's what they were doing. They had some sort of a device. Yeah, John's he's a fascinating fellow, to be sure. And I like him. He's an interesting guy, but he's a nice fellow, too.
It was probably in the mid-70s, and he was in an apartment they were getting ready to evict him from because he had so much electrical equipment in it that they didn't think the floors were going to be hold the weight anymore, and they thought he was going to go down to the next floor. But
it was in New Westminster.
Right. It showed him in some of his experiments, bowling balls and railroad spikes bending and just decomposing before your eyes, and some pretty amazing.
Yeah, he told me that he had a big. This was in a different location in kind of a warehouse, and there was a big snowblower in there. You know, the kind that you push up and down your driveway.
Right.
And he said this thing got thrown across the warehouse when he flipped the switch. So yeah, he's playing with you know, incredibly ridiculously high voltages, and I don't know. I don't think we understand a lot about electricity. There's so much more to understand, I guess, is what I'm saying. And you're right. Levitation, sometimes metal objects would fuse with non-metallic objects. Sometimes they would turn sort of into a gelatinous material. But the problem was that, you know, John is not a trained, he's self-taught, and he's not kind of a disciplined. He doesn't take the scientific approach necessarily. So these experiments were kind of, they were random, difficult to repeat. They wouldn't always repeat. But there's definitely some strange effects going on there. I have no doubt. And his videos are all over YouTube. A lot of them are were shot in film because we're going back now, you know, 30, 35, 40 years in some cases. But if you check out John, the Hutchinson effect on YouTube, you'll see those. All right. Always good to hear from Jersey Doug. Let's say hi to Kevin on the international line in North Bay, beautiful North Bay, Ontario. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Richard. You know, I wanted to talk about something that, you know, it was the big elephant in the living room for a long time, but it's now finally getting mainstream exposure, and that's the aspect of human trafficking.
Yes, you sent me an email this morning. I was reading it on my front porch because I have a woman coming on my weekly syndicated show, The Conspiracy Show, this Sunday, who runs an organization called Free Them. And she's a human rights activist, does tremendous work in drawing attention to this. You're right, the scourge of human trafficking. Something like 2.5 million people fall victim to human trafficking every year. That's probably a conservative number. And then the, you know, modern day slavery, something like, what was the number I read? 25 million. Sorry?
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, modern day slavery. And, you know,
right.
here in Canada, North Bay, Ontario is one of the single worst cities for human trafficking in this country because it is a central city here in Canada. You've been up here before. And as you know, North Bay, Ontario is you've got the crossings of the two Trans-Canada highways, highways 11 and 17. So a lot of traffickers from the big cities, we're not talking about local amateurs here, we're talking about organized crime, because human trafficking is the third most lucrative black market business behind the drug trade and illegal weapons. Human trafficking is one of those illicit trades that organized crime is heavily involved in. The last figure I saw in the United States was $32 billion a year. But North Bay, Ontario, is a hub. It is one of the biggest hubs here in Canada because of its central location, where traffickers will transfer their victims from one trafficker to another, and they'll also set up shop in our hotels here in North Bay, where drones from other cities will come here to do their despicable acts on human beings, you know?
Right, right. Hey, Kevin, you seem to know a lot about this. Why is that?
Because I've studied human trafficking for a long time. 6 years ago, I helped rescue a boy from trafficking. I can't get into any details because of legal issues. But I'm also associated. I'm a volunteer for a group known as Operation Underground Railroad. They are a group of citizen volunteers who help law enforcement rescue children from human trafficking. And I passed their course on human trafficking, understanding, knowing the signs of trafficking, and just doing what I can on a local basis. You know, trying to fight human trafficking, you know, it's now becoming viral now. But the way to fight human trafficking is on a local level. If people really want to get involved with fighting human trafficking, and to rescue children and rescue people that are forced into this despicable crime, but you need to focus on a local level. And people think it doesn't happen in their small communities. Get this, it's happened up in small communities such as Iroquois Falls, Ontario. It happens. Traffickers will take advantage of small communities where they think that it doesn't happen.
It's unbelievable in this day and age that we have modern day slavery, and as you say, it's happening right under our noses, and it's happening in jurisdictions that you would think are, well, you know, we're beyond that. That couldn't happen here. It's very disturbing on a number of levels. And one of the things that concerns me is, you know, why are the conservative government under Stephen Harper here in Canada passed some legislation regarding human trafficking. But that's fairly recently. Why did it take so long?
Quite frankly, because they protect their own. This whole I've been studying the pedophile rings for a very, very long time. And when it comes to the 12 years ago, I was trying to expose the elite pedophile rings here in my area and elsewhere. But you talk about ones like Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and the people, the very powerful people that they are associated with. You're talking billionaires, royalty, top level politicians. These guys protect their own, and that's why in some places, a lot of child sex offenders pretty much get a slap on the wrist when they get caught, you know, or they try to wipe the slate. We're talking about an issue that goes up to the highest levels of government that are involved in this stuff.
I agree with you. Look what happened with that television presenter in England,
Jimmy Savile.
Yes, a total monster, and yet he seemed to be protected by the BBC over there. They knew about it, and it, as you say, it seemed to go to the highest offices in the land, and it is such an evil. If and when we can ever root it out, it's going to expose some people that we don't even suspect. Some will be, maybe we do suspect, others will be people we would never suspect. They might be, in fact, beloved people in society. But I pray that Ghislaine Maxwell lives long enough to spill the beans, and maybe it will, you know, it will rip this story wide open and expose it to sunlight for the world to see, because that's there's a lot riding on Ghislaine Maxwell. Well, let's see what happens. Thank you so much for the call, Kevin. I hope you can listen to the Conspiracy Show Sunday night when we devote the 2 hours to human trafficking. Well, we are going to head into a break. My gosh, this is whipping along quickly here. So if you've got a line, hold on to it. And if you don't, get on board. And don't forget, we've got that special hotline We've got a special hotline set up for you future Nikola Teslas or Thomas Townsend Browns, or maybe you're the next Einstein. 818-817-0021. 818-817-0021. If you think you have solved the mystery of antigravitics or superluminal motion or warp speed or time travel, I'd love to hear from you. All right, here's John Lennon taking us into the break with Nobody Told Me on Coast to Coast AM.